From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, which is really becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, right? Helping your fellow entrepreneur here in Sacramento. And that's what we're going to do today. We are going to help you to really understand what's changing in the way we reach our audience in terms of marketing and advertising. And today we have somebody who is a few steps ahead of the game in this realm. It's Josh Hanisch. He is the VP at 329. Is it 329 Marketing? What is it? Is that
it's just 329?
Just 329. So you guys, obviously, the brand speaks for itself. 329. What's 329 stand for?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's actually a great conversation starter. So my business partner, Kevin Howe, he started the agency in 2010 and he left his old agency. He just quit one day and that day happened to be on March 29th. Ah. So 329. And so he and his wife, Nicole, were talking, what should this new agency be called? And actually, Nicole was the one that said, why don't you call it 329?
That's awesome. Yeah, she's obviously creative. I love the house. They're awesome people.
Yeah.
And they are part of the Backyard Advantage, as are you. And so I saw that you're coming to our big backyard, Best of the Backyard.
Yes.
Thank you for coming to that. It happens in the next couple of weeks. So
yeah.
I don't know when this show is airing, but I expect it to be a fun time.
Should be good.
So I'm glad you're there to celebrate with us. So,
me too.
Now, in terms of at some point on the show today, I want to talk about this cave that you've came from. So remind me to circle back to that. That's not the main topic of the show, but you might want to stick around and hear how Josh just got back from Italy and spent, I guess, nights in this like 4,000-year-old cave / hotel room.
Yeah.
So I want to dive into that at the end. Okay. But before that, let's just talk about how technology is affecting the way we reach our audience. Maybe just broadly speaking, and then we can get into some specifics on you know, AI and what's that doing.
Yeah. So let's go back to the 90s. So I was born in 85. I remember the world without technology. I remember how we would find our attorneys, our plumbers, our accountants, and that was in the Yellow Pages, this book that we had on the kitchen counter. And there were strategies on how to be number one in that book, where if you named your accounting firm AAA Accounting, or you bought the front cover of the telephone book, like that's how you got seen.
Well, I want to remind you that televisions existed back there, and that I was in the TV business, so that's electronics. So.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, good point. And so I feel like, basically, I feel like technology has allowed us to be more DIY with each advancement. So back when I was a kid, back in the early 90s, if my dad needed a professional, he was going to be flipping through the phone book. And so there wasn't a ton of ability for him to do anything about the broken AC. He had to call a repairman to come over. Then when the internet came out in 1994 and then Google indexed it in the late 90s, then we had all this information that we could actually go and kind of find out something for ourselves before we called that AC repairman. Then basically in 2004, when the iPhone came out, 2007 when the iPhone came out, then we had that technology in our phones. And that was around the same time that YouTube came out. And so we had all these websites, we had all these videos that could show us how to fix our problems. So buyers became more and more intelligent, more and more DIY, more and more capable of like helping themselves. And basically, as technology has improved, the power for buyers to do their own research has just increased. So that's when SEO, search engine optimization, was a huge thing, where you like stuffed your website full of these keywords and you were trying to like outrank everybody else on Google. And then Google would catch on and then they'd blacklist your site if you put too many keywords in and all that kind of stuff. So then with AI, basically what's happening is anytime that we had to do a Google search to find a professional, that research would take hours sometimes to find someone that we trusted, someone that we wanted to work with. AI right now is becoming or is our personal research assistant. It is our discoverer for us. It's tireless. It works through the night. It does all of the research that we could do in a day in about 5 seconds.
Well, the other thing I've noticed from playing with ChatGPT specifically and, you know, using it really on a daily basis, I don't think I've Googled something in quite a while because ChatGPT will customize it. It knows me or thinks it does. And yeah. It kind of brings forth, I guess, concepts and solutions that are more custom tailored to me,
right,
and what I might be looking for. And I don't have to just click through a bunch of sites to try to find, to piece together the data.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so what's interesting is Google noticed in May of this year that for the first time in 10 years, there was a drop in search traffic. And that's because people are moving to these other AIs, ChatGPT, Perplexity, Claude. And they're realizing that AI is just giving them the answer. Like, they're asking it, I need help with X. And then it's coming back with Y and next steps, which is what you don't get from a Google search on your own. And so I realized this early last year. And, you know, AI is cool. It helps us do a ton of things faster. It makes us more efficient. But I feel like everyone is only focusing on half of the AI conversation. The other half that I don't hear a lot of people talking about is, how is this changing buyer behavior? How is this changing lead flow, deal flow for any business, whether it's B2C or B2B? And to your point, you know, I was curious. I was like, well, what happens if I type in, you know, best marketing agency in Sacramento into ChatGPT? Where do we even come up? And we didn't even come up at the time. This was, you know, a year and a half ago.
And you guys are the best.
I know, right?
Yeah.
We should be. Yeah. And actually, there was no local companies that were coming up. It was these huge national just agencies that, you know, they just basically operate on a volume business. Mm-hmm. And so that's what started me thinking, like, how can we optimize our site so that it's getting picked up by AI? Because, you know, not to get too into the weeds, but I mean, you basically right now are making websites that humans can interact with because people still go to websites. But there's these other entities. There are bots. There's Google bots that index the internet every single day. And then there's AI bots. And AI bots are very different than Google bots. They're just like us. AI was built to learn like a human.
Right. It's the English language.
Exactly. They scour the internet. They do their research just like a human. If you hired us to build your website and we built a really hard website to read, you had to scroll a ton to like find the information, like through pages and pages and pages, human beings would go to your website and bounce right away. They'd be like, this site's too hard to use. AI is the exact same. You have to build websites that are easy for the AI to use, which I won't get into the complexities of that, but it has to do with the back end of the site. How are you showing green flags to the AI that says, hey, you know, Mark Haney asked me a question on ChatGPT. I'm Mark Haney's AI. I need to find an answer for him right now. Do you have the answer? And you can build a website that has all these green flags on it that says, yes, AI, come over here. Here's the answer to Mark's question. Here's a bunch of other resources that you can give him. And AIs love that because AI companies are in the business of making money, obviously. And how do they make money? By having good user experience. And if they are getting their user quick, accurate responses, then they're going to retain more users. So it's to your advantage to make sure that you're playing by that AI game, which is AEO or GEO, answer engine optimization or generative answer optimization, or sorry, generative engine optimization. And again, I won't go into the details, but it is a totally different game than search engine optimization for Google.
So right now, you can't do any paid stuff like on ChatGPT.
No.
It's all basically kind of organic. So
yes.
It's it really, you want to have it optimized because you really can't, at the moment, you can't advertise.
You can't pay to play. Yeah. Right. There's no way to outrank someone else right now through paid means. But you can do it just by restructuring your website. You don't have to necessarily even rebuild your website. It's just about getting the answers up front and easy to follow for AI. And then the back end, it's called JSON file. So AIs, they love JSON files. That's like what they learn on. That's how they basically come up with the answers that they come up with. So if your JSON file on your website matches with what your data, meaning like the front end, like what you and I see, that's perfect, because then the AI knows, oh, this is a FAQ page about whatever Mark asks, then I'm going to go here because I know that the answer is going to be here. Sometimes, you know, we see websites all the time that we didn't build, and we'll look at a website and we'll be so surprised that there's a FAQ page that has all this amazing information, but the developer was lazy and didn't change the schema or the JSON file. And the JSON file literally says about page. So AI will crawl the website and be like, oh, that's an about page. I don't want to go there.
Okay.
When in reality, that actually was the page they needed, but they didn't go there because of the JSON file.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So obviously there's key tips, but maybe could you break down, okay, let's talk about website development just for a minute, because websites, not the only means for attracting an audience, right, or for selling your product. So this, maybe we start with websites. Besides this, optimizing the website, are there other things that we should be thinking about in terms of the way we construct a website in the era of AI?
Yeah. I mean, this is in the area of AI, and for us, don't tell people what they already know about you. So meaning if you are, for us, we're a marketing and a web development agency. People will come to our website because they know that. Our homepage shouldn't say that. Mm. A homepage shouldn't say what they already know. It should say something else that piques their interest, whether that is a promise, like we promise that you will have, you know, X number of visitors per month, which would be ridiculous, but something that you can promise, or a human differentiator. So brands should lean into differentiation through like humanity, especially in the age of AI.
Would that be like in the form of a story potentially?
Story, if it's a family run business, you know, really hitting that home. If it's a business that really does a lot of hiring within, like hires junior level, but then they like groom them and promote them inside, like talking about that. Even just client wins, like showcasing that, you know, the why is Amazon popular? Not because of the, you know, same day shipping. It's popular because there is so much social proof on Amazon. You go to a product and you can see that 4,000 people gave it a 5-star review. Well, they want to see the same thing from your website. They want to see people that look just like them that have had success doing business with you. So that should be first and foremost on your website.
Okay.
The other thing is the social proof for AI, which is different. So AI doesn't just take your word for granted. It wants to verify that you are actually a leader in your space. So that's why leveraging social media, like LinkedIn, even Instagram, Facebook, where you are answering people's questions with links back to your website. Even Reddit. Reddit is one of the most cited backlinks websites can use. So, you know, for us, if I'm on a Reddit feed for business owners and they're like, gosh, I just can't like break this like AI code. Like, how can I get ranked in ChatGPT? I would say, hey, my name's Josh. I'm VP, co-founder of 329. Here's a blog article we wrote just like for exactly what you're asking. Check it out. Mm-hmm. So those types of backlinks show that AI, because they can check it in a millisecond. There's this blog. Oh, it was sourced. It was cited over here as well. And, you know, three people liked it on Reddit.
Well, what about like YouTube? So we do a lot on YouTube here. Obviously, we do the show on YouTube. We also do it on the different podcast channels. Does it index YouTube and podcast? How does it do that? Is it on your notes, or it doesn't go into the video and listen and watch a video?
Yeah, no. So a lot of it is like social proof, where it's like, you know, like for instance, this podcast, depending on how you guys title it, if anyone were to type in like, you know, I'd like to talk to a AI expert on answer engine optimization, my name might pop up more than someone else because they look at a site like yours, who's very reputable, has years of existence, years of trustworthiness, and say, oh, well, Josh was on this podcast with Mark Haney. Like, you know, we're going to give him a little bit more juice, like in the AI results.
Okay.
So yeah, more content on all the platforms is great. And just make sure that it links back to wherever you want it to link back. Okay.
Link it back. Link your website back to these social media platforms.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I would think a lot of people that one slips by them.
It slips by them a lot. I mean, yeah, it's...
Especially on somebody like me. I've got the Mark Haney Show, and then I've got a bunch of companies, and I don't think about connecting those back to my companies necessarily, although why not?
Yeah, you should, because it gives your brand that much bigger presence online. So then if you have a bigger presence, you're seen more often because you're bigger. Mm-hmm. It's a great tool to use. And I also feel like people, they get, you know, Kevin and I, we are in sales meetings all the time with clients. And I feel like so many people have bad experiences with agencies because so many agencies are a volume business where they're just trying to get business and then they fit everybody into this template.
Okay.
Where it's like, okay, you're a construction company. We're going to run your ads this way. You're a law firm. You're going to run the ads this way, which to a certain extent, construction companies and law firms do have a little bit of a framework that they follow. But construction company A is going to be way different than construction company B. And you need to approach their marketing from like a different standpoint.
Yeah, so their goals may be similar, but the assets that they have to work with might be quite a bit different. Maybe, right. For example, they might not have a Facebook page and this other guy does.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So we basically take the standpoint of we treat everyone uniquely. Like we make sure that, because what, I mean, obviously having a good product or service is like the bare minimum. But what is going to get someone to do business with you over someone else? And it's your brand. It's your identity, how you communicate your values and your service. So that's really what we, you know, focus on when we're meeting with clients. Forgot where we were going with that.
Yeah, okay, why don't I switch gears? I was kind of focused in on websites, which are an important component for your AI search. Go ahead.
What I was going to say was, so a lot of companies, they play the old Google game where they focus on, we're going to rank you for 10,000 keywords. We're going to get you 10,000 backlinks. But Google doesn't care about that. And AI really doesn't care about volume. They care about quality. So if you can get 5 really good backlinks, like with the SACB or with Forbes magazine or the LA Times or the SF Chronicle or some even just regional publication, that goes way further than getting 10,000 backlinks that you paid $60 for that really aren't going to move the needle.
All right, let's talk about backlinks. So you're talking about on the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, they're linking back to your site.
Exactly.
So that that's a social proof scenario that's very, very powerful.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So it seems like the Sacramento Business Journal. Like they're a very well-run, respected organization. If you get links on there, whether you get them organically or you pay them, like you run a sponsored article, that is way better. You can get 10,000 backlinks for like $80 a month. You should take the $80 and go buy, like do a sponsored ad somewhere or a sponsored article on a reputable site and get that one really good backlink. Because that will take your site way further than trying to get this volume.
So you're coming on this podcast. We'll tag you backlink, yeah. Right? And then is there something that, so we'll do that. But is there something that you do on your end to help, I guess, solidify that onto your website? Or it just automatically backlinks because I copied you or whatever?
Yeah. So, you know, we could be very strategic and give you the backlink to our AEO page. Hmm. That is the best way to go about doing it. Your homepage is the next best. And then having that in the text where it's like, you know, maybe after this, we go back and write a blog about like my experience here and talking mm-hmm. with you and like what we talked about and then linking back to your podcast.
Oh, okay.
So it should be a mutual relationship. It's not just a one way.
I need to have more marketing conversations on my show. Cause there's backlinks. I mean, that's really cool. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
You feel like we covered that, the website piece enough? Yeah. Okay. And then we can always circle back around if another idea comes around, but
sure.
I keep thinking about, okay, so in the world of technology, we're using chat. Most people have heard of ChatGPT or Grok or whatever, but ChatGPT is the kind of the one I use most.
Yeah.
So that's the one that, since you can't advertise, and a lot of times people aren't able to show up there other than maybe some of these strategies like you're talking about. But a lot of times I get no, I'm not really prompted, just my normal conversation with ChatGPT, nothing really comes up in terms of any kind of recommendation or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to become a part of that conversation besides what you talked about? Because I'm invested in a few companies that are sort of exploring that.
Yeah. So you're asking, is there a way to show up in results?
Yeah.
Other than using like answer engine optimization?
Mm-hmm.
Not really.
Okay.
Not yet. I don't know how much I can talk about it on the podcast, but we may be talking about the same company. I know there's a local company that is working on trying to place ads dynamically in text results.
Mm-hmm.
And so that could be like the future of how to get ChatGPT, how you can pay ChatGPT to basically give your site a higher ranking over someone else in the results. But I think it has to do with what you're asking AI. So if you're a lot of people, so I think it's 64% of millennials and Gen Z are using ChatGPT on a daily basis. So that means, you know, if I'm using it, I could be using it as my therapist.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to give me business recommendations.
Right. Like, Josh, yeah, maybe that's why I'm not getting.
Josh, it seems like you're kind of sad. Like you should go like check out a yoga class at this studio or whatever. Like it's not going to do that. But I do ask for it for specific questions. Like I'm like when I went to Italy, mm-hmm. you know, I'm looking, here's my travel itinerary. Like, where do you think I should stay? And it'll pop up restaurants. It'll pop up hotels. It'll pop up like things to do for our clients. Like we work with a lot of construction and manufacturing companies. And so I've been showing them, I can go in as someone who doesn't know much about like machining metal. And I can say, hey, I need aluminum at this tolerance. Who in the Midwest would be best for this type of manufacturing with a lead time of 6 weeks? And then ChatGPT will come back with five businesses that says you should check out these five businesses. And then what's really cool about it is it'll tell you, here are the questions you should ask them to make sure that you can understand who can actually give you the results that you need when you need them.
Mm, wow.
Which is powerful because it helps you vet them.
Yeah. What about deciding using ChatGPT or some other AI product to help find our customers? So in other words, a lot of times we don't even know who our customers should be or are. So we start A/B testing, messaging and things like that.
Yeah.
Or maybe even using influencers to go out and find new customers. How is that changing in today's technology and in you know, the way we're using technology to, I guess, get found.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So I'll start with what we do for analytics.
Okay.
Your website should have analytics. If it doesn't have Google Analytics at the least, get Google Analytics on there. It'll tell you how long someone came to your site, how long they scrolled for, where they started, where they ended, where they found your website from. And then there's more advanced analytics. So like we hook up to client sites, advanced analytics for AI. So we're actually able to tell our clients, hey, you came up in these queries. Like, here's how you're ranking in these queries on AI, which is really helpful. I feel like AI speeds, like how, this is how we use AI internally. It speeds up how we know what to help you rank for. You might come to us and say, you know, I manufacture widgets and all I know from my data is that, you know, it does really well here in Sacramento, but I want to expand further. You know, primarily most of my sales are, you know, 47% men, 53% women, between the ages of like 30 and 45, let's say. Well, we can load all of that data into AI and use it as like a marketing consultant mm-hmm. and talk to AI and be like, okay, hey, here's Sacramento. Here's the company. Here's what they do. Here's what the widget is. Who do you think we should be targeting? And it'll come back and tell us. And then the biggest thing that people are not understanding about AI is there's bias in it. So it will tell you what you want to hear.
I've noticed that. Today I was talking to my AI and I had to encourage it to be a little bit more, I didn't use the word argumentative, but you know, provide a contrarian view to what I'm saying. And it agreed to do that. Yeah. So hopefully, so now how do you deal with all that bias?
Yeah. So part of that is running like hidden queries. So you can click on temporary on ChatGPT.
Okay.
And it'll forget who you are.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is using one AI for the prompt and the other AI for the actual work. So for instance, like asking ChatGPT to come up with a Gemini deep research prompt and then taking that prompt that ChatGPT gave you and like using it in Gemini helps because you're just coming at Gemini with the prompt. It doesn't know all the backstory on like how you're getting the prompt. And then the other part is doing your own research. So it will source where it got that information. Click on some of those sources.
Okay.
So many people are just like, oh, ChatGPT said it and it must be true. I mean, even Sam Altman said on X how surprised he was that how much people trust AI. He even said, he's like, you shouldn't be trusting AI. Like it's a machine that's learning on this data that may or may not even be true. And its output may or may not even be accurate.
Okay. So the different large language models, right? So I'm kind of curious which ones you like to use. Obviously Google's got a product, OpenAI, yeah. As we've been talking about ChatGPT, it looks like they've got the largest market share, Grok.
Yeah.
Are there certain ones that are sort of like in your, I don't know. We use these every day.
Yeah. ChatGPT and Gemini.
Okay.
I mean, Gemini, because our whole company is on Google Workspace. Mm-hmm. Plus Notebook LM and Deep Research that Google has, I think is some of the best. I think what we're going to start seeing is that these AIs are going to have their cult following, meaning like Claude is really good for code. So you're going to see a lot of developers use Claude to help them debug code. Or like our development team is like, yeah, like these like frameworks that I will use every single time over and over again. Like I'm just going to have AI do like build those and then I'll go in and actually code like the nuance of the site where you still need like a human touch. Because that's the other thing, not to get off on a tangent, but like vibe coding. So a lot of people have heard vibe coding where like you don't have to be a programmer to like build these like apps or whatever.
Right.
And I call BS on a lot of it because anyone that I know that has done a successful project with vibe coding has had experience building software.
Okay.
There's very few people that I've seen that have taken from an idea to scale an app or a website just with AI. You still need an engineer at some point to test it, obviously, and like to verify that like the site is running efficiently. So that's one thing is AI has code bloat. So it uses way more code than it actually needs to get the project done. And then there's all these custom integrations. So the more complex the site, you need a human being to make those integrations happen. AI will eventually take that over. I'm not saying that it's not going to, but as it stands right now, vibe coding is a cool, it's a cool like project. It's a good hobby. It's hard to build things at scale.
Now this is like if you want to build your website and just use ChatGPT to build your website for you.
Right.
Is that what vibe coding is?
Yeah. I was at this CEO group and this guy came up and was like, look at this website that AI made. And it was like, just like this event sign up page.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like it's basically like an Eventbrite sign up page, but like you run like one of the largest construction companies in Sacramento. Like, are you going to trust AI to integrate your CRM with your ERP and like your website? Like all these different systems that need to, as of right now, no. Like AI still can't do that very well.
Yeah, well, let me ask you about that then. In terms of people utilizing these different, like their CRM and ERP and getting that to work with the website, is that part of what you guys do?
Yeah, yeah, we okay. do all of that. So in my opinion, a business is only as good as the information that it has. And then to take that further, it's only as good as who can access that data and how that can be manipulated. So we just talked with a client yesterday who does product packaging. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a CRM. Like literally everything is just done on email mm-hmm. and I think post-it notes.
Wow.
And so like just building them a CRM and connecting it to their website. And why do you connect it to the website? Because what's scary about technology and cool at the same time is if you go onto our website and you put in and say, I'm going to put in my email because I want to be on the list to get their newsletter. Every time you come back to the website, I know exactly what page you're on, how long you looked at it, what you clicked on, what you didn't click on. And I could just make a phone call. Like if I was trying to sell you, let's say, mm-hmm. and you were on our AEO page, let's say, I could just call you in the middle of the day to you and be like, hey, Mark, how's it going?
You know, I was just thinking about you.
Yeah, just thinking about you. You know, like, you know, we're running a special on our AEO or whatever. And you're like, huh, that's, I was actually just, you know, on your page. Oh, really? You were, you know, like, that's how creepy, like, yeah. you can be with the technology. But it's also beneficial. So, I mean, in my opinion, a good business gives people what they need and what they want at a fair price. So if we're helping you with the goals that you need, then I feel like it's a win on both sides of the conversation.
Yeah. So the interesting thinking about workflows, a lot of what I've seen in AI and some of these startup companies, and even a lot of these larger companies, they're building out their software, if you will, to be more efficient, where you, you maybe you don't need as many employees and that kind of thing. So are you finding efficiencies for your business? And then obviously you must be right in the middle of people's workflow. If you're talking about their ERP and their CRM, you know, you're right in the middle of, you know, probably discussions with headcount and things like that in terms of how many people do we need to do this job? If we get this all configured better,
yeah,
we need less people, or these people can go be more productive.
Yeah, no, we are. And it's industry by industry. AI is definitely impacting more industries than others. I mean, for us, we set an initiative for our company that by the end of the year, everyone on our team should have some type of an AI co-pilot, meaning an AI that helps them do their job like better and faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that it relieves their bandwidth. You know, a lot of bandwidth is taken up by tasks that shouldn't. So if we can have the people on our team do the things that they're really, really good at, and like that's like why we hired them, and not the other like mundane tasks that could just be done by AI. Well, that makes our company better. It makes them feel better about their job because they're working on the things that they actually like really enjoy doing, and then they're letting the AI do the things that they don't really care to do.
Right. Well, you guys are writing software at some level, so has it affected how many people it takes to knock out a project so one person can do the work of five sometimes?
Not yet.
Okay.
I think it probably helps more in the planning. So like I said in the very beginning, we treat all of our clients, you know, uniquely. So we create blueprints, so we sit down. I always get worried when a client comes to us and they're like, well, the last company said like we should just run Google ads and Instagram ads and LinkedIn ads. And then we're looking at it and it's like, well, why did they say that? And like, well, they didn't really tell us why. They just said like, that's what we should do. Well, come to find out, you know, they're a product packaging company. And really in today's digital world, you know, maybe analog is better. So like we might come up with a strategy on, let's create these really cool boxes that you can send these restaurants that show them how cool your product packaging is and the pricing. And so AI can help us with that, where it's like we'll sit down and use AI as like another team member. And it's like, mm-hmm. hey, like here are the strategies we're thinking. And that's something that I push heavily is always do the work first and then have AI add to it.
It's like having if you use them as you're like an assistant or a research assistant, if you will. So you strategize on what the customer's goals are face to face and these kind of things.
Right.
And then use the assistant, the AI piece of it, to help generate ideas so that you can make some final decisions.
Yeah, we might, you know, we'll tell the AI, okay, we want to go the analog route. We want to make these custom boxes. Here's their products. Here's what we're thinking at a high level, what it could be. And then it'll spit back like, oh, well, yeah, we can do what you said, but then have you thought about like adding this into the box? Or there's mm-hmm. this company that makes this type of box that you didn't even know about on the internet. And you can contact them to see how you can add like an interactiveness to their box or whatever. So, because there's, I think it was a Harvard study that just talked about our brains using AI. And if you just use AI, if you literally are just like, hey, AI, I want to write a blog on answer engine optimization. Please write it for me. It writes it. You don't retain any of that knowledge. So like for blog writing, we always write the blog ourselves, even at a high level, like big chunks, and then give it to AI for it to optimize. And then we check it again and make sure that it's accurate and that it's actually optimizing what we want it to optimize.
Okay, so besides Google search, obviously Google search is beginning to lose share against you know, AI, you know, ChatGPT and of the world. And I think they're losing it faster than what people know, because it just seems like, I just feel like I'm 62 and I'm only using one.
Yeah.
And so I don't know how they're tracking that, but I have a feeling that every conversation I have, I might have a conversation that goes back and forth, you know, 5 or 10 times. That's counted, I think, as one inquiry on ChatGPT, where in Google, I might go through and click on a bunch of different things if I'm using Google to search.
Right.
So I think it's slightly different, but I guess my question is, you know, you're in the trenches on this. What else is getting disrupted? What other things in the marketing stack, if you will, are losing share to this, to our attention?
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. I mean, that is, people are competing for our attention. Mm-hmm. Like that is the biggest asset right now, is someone's attention. And so, I mean, I can say that digital is losing its value in a lot of industries, meaning because we've been, you know, social media advertising really hit the ground running in like around 2010. And I've actually called like AEO the greatest first mover advantage since social media marketing, because the companies that figured out social media marketing early on killed it. Like they were able to leverage that like no one else. And I think AEO is going to be similar. And I feel like, you know, what is that, 15 years that we've been in the social media world of being advertised to all the time, that I feel like people want that face-to-face interaction, especially after like COVID. So, and I'm speaking, you know, we work with a lot of B2B companies. So I'm talking about like going to conferences. I think conferences mm-hmm. are like making a huge like comeback. And I think people really value being able to sit and talk to somebody and not like an AI chatbot, like on a website. I also think that knowledge sharing. So rather than, you know, ads are still relevant, but the ad structure themselves is very different. So instead of, like, the worst ad is selling right away. Like, you don't want to ask for someone that doesn't know you for money. Mm. That makes no sense. So you need to give something up in return. So the first ad should be, here's how I can make your life better. Here's some knowledge. So like webinars are, you know, popular. Just any face-to-face, even if it is virtual, is I think better than digital anytime if you're trying to convert someone. I think digital is great at the high level of like getting them into your ecosystem. But and where I'm going with this is, you know, we have AIs that can look like you and I. So there's a lot of companies that are trying to turn you, a video mm-hmm. of you that you load in, into this Mark Haney that can live forever, talk about anything that you put into it. And I think once that starts becoming even better than it is, because it still looks kind of glitchy if you see an AI.
So like Mark Haney GPT type thing?
Yeah, or like it could, like, you know, creating good social media content takes a lot of work.
Right.
And so you could have a AI of yourself mm-hmm. where instead of you having to be in the studio and film over and over again these spots, you just have an AI.
Yeah, a video image of me talking about startups or yes. venture capital or AI, and making me look like a thought leader, whether right. I am a thought leader or not. It could right. say, it could search the internet or search you know, the world to right. find out what should Mark Caney's opinion be.
Right. Yeah. Or I could start mine, you know, the Josh Hanisch AI, and I could rip your blogs, put it into my AI, and I could say everything that you would say, and then people are going to think I'm the expert, you know? And so, which gets into tricky, you know, how do you prove that and all that?
Yeah.
So where I'm going is, you know, AI is disrupting digital ads, video. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just going to cause more people to want the real thing where it's like, can we build a community where we get together and talk about, you know, our problems, or can I build, you know, for our clients, can I build a community around AEO? Like, is there a knowledge center where other marketers, like, and next week I'm talking to a group of marketers in the construction space in San Francisco, and, you know, they're all CMOs at these large construction companies. How can we create a community where we get together face to face and we know, like, we're investing in each other and having that time together? So I think as AI becomes more capable, people are going to value the human experience more and more.
Yeah, and I think I've had some people on my show, and I've invested into companies that utilized celebrity branding to build out their companies, whether it be influencers or maybe they're the celebrity brand, what have you. How much is influencer marketing, if you will, or these celebrity brands affected by all this technology? Are they a victim of this, or can they see their world accelerate?
Yeah, I mean, I think they could see their world accelerate in terms of creating the content because they can create it faster. I think with what we're seeing with AI in terms of video creation, I mean, some, like, I don't know if you've seen it, but it can produce, you can produce video games in real time. Mm-hmm. You can just say, hey, recreate Grand Theft Auto for me, and like it'll recreate Grand Theft Auto. You can play it right there. Same with like movie scenes. So I think what's going to be interesting is, you know, how does licensing work in terms of if I'm using Ryan Reynolds, let's say, you know, everyone knows Ryan Reynolds, obviously. And if I'm using his AI likeness, am I breaching if copyright?
Especially if you're making money off of it.
Right.
Even like, indirectly.
Right. So how are we going to control that? I can make him say whatever I want. I can say, yeah, go with 329. They're the best marketing agency I've ever worked. You know, like, is that going to mean they're going to be less important because anyone mm-hmm. can make it? Or are we going to come up with a way to verify, like, no, this is Ryan Reynolds on this video? Like, is there a way that we're going to be able to come up and add that verification? I'm not sure. But I think, back to your question, AI is definitely going to help content creators and influencers create content faster. I think what's going to also happen is either the content creators or the agencies behind them are going to be able to hyper-target a lot better.
Mm.
So get the data in. You know, good marketing is all about testing. It's like when we start with a client, we never work with our maximum budget. We're always like, what's the minimum we can use so we can learn? Let's learn first. And then once we know what's hitting, then let's push as much marketing dollars as we can towards that. And then while that's hitting, let's go do A/B test something else so that when that, you know, dries up, we have another route that we can go.
Interesting. Now, are you using agents, agentic ACE, processes to do that testing?
Yeah, I mean, some of it's built in to like mm-hmm. Meta or Google or LinkedIn. I wouldn't say that we have agents built, but we have workflows built mm-hmm. with AI where it's still manual, where Ruben on our team, he's in charge of ads, will, you know, load it in one AI and then take that and load it into a different AI to go to the next step as far as figuring out what's working, what's not. But that's something else that's interesting, and it's probably maybe 5 years away, but I believe there is a future in that there are going to be two internets, and one will be for agents and one will be for humans. And
oh, wow. I haven't heard that before.
So the reason why I'm saying that is because Perplexity just signed a deal with, I believe, Visa and also Shopify. And so through Perplexity, you can have an agent go into any Shopify site. I don't think it's live right now, but this is where they're going with it. Go to any Shopify site on your behalf and buy whatever product you tell it to. So if you're in Perplexity and you're like, hey, here's a screenshot of these sunglasses I saw on Instagram. Can you find me the best price that'll get here in a week or whatever your timeline mm-hmm. is? The agent will have full autonomy because you've already signed your life away, basically. It has your credit card information. It'll go out to the internet and find the best deal in your time frame and buy those sunglasses for you. So what we're looking at right now and what we're investing our time into is not only the answer engine side, but how do we build websites that talk to agents and that agents can use? So right now there's a lot of websites, most websites out there, like, can't be used by agents. And so I think, this is my prediction, is that humans are going to use the internet less and less, maybe for entertainment, mm-hmm. YouTube, social media, but to actually go to a website to like make a dinner reservation or to,
you'll just tell your agent what you want and have them go to a different site probably than the norm. Let's say I wanted a dinner reservation at Bennett's restaurant.
Yeah.
They Bennett's might create either its own site for agents to, mm-hmm. to find them easier,
yeah.
and do business more seamlessly.
Yeah. What'll probably happen is it'll be the same site, but then there'll be an API that will basically say, hey, AI agent, come in through here.
Okay.
And use our system how you need to make the reservation.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, you know, that's interesting because then website design, I think, is shifting towards agent. Mm-hmm. So as less and less humans use websites, we need to be thinking about how agents use them.
Yeah, agent-friendly website.
Yeah. And I mean, luckily for us, like I said at the very beginning, AI was built to mimic humans. So the agents will be very similar to us, just a lot faster. And they don't care about the pretty colors. They don't care about your brand, let's say. They just, my person in front of the computer screen asked me to make a reservation at Bennett's. Like, I just need to go and find it and, like, make the reservation.
Yeah. Now, you've done presentations. You've mentioned conferences. I believe you either are speaking to EO or maybe you just spoke to EO on this topic. Is that... Did you already do it?
Yeah, Craig Hetrich had me down and spoke with an executive group.
Okay.
And then I'm speaking at a conference in March. It's the SMPS Pacific Region Conference up in Seattle on this topic.
Are people finding this is like the hottest, one of the hottest topics in business today? Because everybody cares about their top line revenue because it affects the bottom line. And no one wants to be left behind.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this is, like I said, this was on no one's, in my opinion, it was on no one's radar. Everyone has been talking about how is AI going to make your business more efficient. Very few people have talked about how it's changing the buyer journey. So almost every time when I have a conversation with someone, I like see their mind kind of get blown like as I'm talking to them because they're like, oh yeah, like how have I not thought about the other half of this like equation? And I was telling you earlier before we started shooting, like I used to teach before I started my company. I taught math and computer science. And I love educating. Like, I love giving people useful information. And so when I'm talking to executives or CMOs or whoever, telling them this and having them get it, like, have that light turn on is like, yeah, like, you do need to be thinking about this. And we can help you. Like, this is not mm-hmm. the first time for us thinking about this.
All right. So what components did I not ask you that might be in your presentation or, you know, some things that are like, this is kind of maybe common sense, but we should get the word out there about this. That's maybe, you know, that I've steered this thing around and like I've weaved my way into the conversation.
Yeah.
What did I not cover? What did we not cover?
I would say everyone, you know, Google's been around for 25 plus years. So everyone thinks that they need to be thinking about their website content in terms of keywords. You should start thinking about your website content in terms of questions. So it's called question clustering. AI is an answer engine, or sorry, ChatGPT is an answer engine. It's an answer engine because you ask it a question. So we need to be optimizing our websites for the questions that people are going to be asking AI. So some of that can start with Google. You can look at your analytics to see what people typed in. Some of them will be questions. But one of the best ways to go about doing it is pretending you're your target client. What would you type into ChatGPT? And then seeing what comes up next. So ChatGPT, when you ask it a question, will then say, would you like me to also find information about X?
Right.
So on your website, you literally answer those questions on your website. Like, don't play any games. Just answer it on the first part of the page and then answer the next one. And mm-hmm. the goal to any website is strong FAQ pages. And a lot of people are like, Josh, that's boring. And like, it just looks boring. And I'm like, I know it looks boring, but that's what AI wants. And so have a ton of FAQ pages on your website and just put the answer out there and build your content in question clusters. If they ask this, then what's going to happen next? What are they going to ask next?
I love it. Okay, so let's get back to the cave then. I teased this at the beginning of the show that you went to Italy. You took this really badass trip to Italy. You went all by yourself, which to me is like crazy, but you're there to celebrate a big birthday.
Yeah, turning 40.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you go by yourself and you run into friends, make new friends, and you guys do all this crazy stuff. Maybe share us a little bit about the trip. And then it sounds like it was like one of the last days you're in this 4,000-year-old hotel that's a cave.
Yeah.
Okay. Give us the backstory.
Yeah. Okay. So I've never been to Italy, and it was something I wanted to do. It was on my bucket list. So booked the trip, and part of the trip, I signed up to join a sailing crew for a week to learn how to sail. And part of that is I'm on a boat with 8 other people I've never met before. We're all from different countries. And so...
And on this boat, that's like an overnight trip with 8 people you don't know.
Yeah, it's 7 nights. Yeah. I mean, I'm bunking with...
Hopefully you like the people.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, he's one of my great friends now, but his name's Thomas. He lives in Northern France. Like, we bunked together the first night. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was great. So that was very cool. Got to see the whole Amalfi Coast, like, from the boat. And then I went to this town called Matera. It's the 3rd oldest inhabited city in the world. It's a UNESCO site. I found it by watching No Time to Die, which is a James Bond film. And it is the coolest place. It is so unique. The stones are so worn that they're actually slippery. Like, you have to be careful, like, when you're walking down the steps.
It's like one of the oldest cities known to man.
Yeah, right. And so I booked this hotel, and the whole city is in this valley with a bunch of caves. Like, it started off as a bunch of caves, like 10,000 years ago. That's the earliest they found human remains. And then over the eons, they have just added to the caves, but then built buildings that are attached to these caves. And so my hotel, the front looks like this really cool stone building, but all of the rooms are 4,000-year-old caves.
Oh, my gosh.
And I walk in, and...
I assume there's no air conditioning or anything?
No air conditioning. Yeah. But it's also very cool, like, yeah, literally cool. Mm-hmm. Like,
because you're in those side, you're in a of cave. The rock.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a little, like, booklet about my room, and I read it, and... It was just cool. The book said, like, you know, just imagine, like, what people were doing in your room, like, 4,000 years ago. And, like, here you are now,
yeah,
with, like, a TV and lights and running water.
A room without a view, I guess, right? No view, I suppose.
Oh, it has... Well, I don't know if we can put this on here, but I have a really cool video of my room, and it actually has a stellar view.
Oh, they had a hole in the side of the cave or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's... You walk in.
Oh, you walk in the main door.
And
okay.
I had a terrace on the front that overlooked all of Matera, and it was... It is one of the best places I've ever been to. Yeah.
How big was your room?
I don't know, maybe 400 square feet.
Okay, and then they just attached, like, a bathroom, or they build a bathroom out inside the room and check the cave?
I don't know if it was already like that when they bought the hotel, but they had to dig into the wall to put the bathroom. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was very then they had, like, great lighting, like, they lit it very well. It was very cool.
Okay, and so how many rooms are in the hotel, roughly?
I think there were 17.
17 rooms, and how many are caves? They're all caves?
All of them, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
17 caves.
Because they had a spa, too, and the spa was below in huge caves that were filled with, you know, hot water, cold water. One was a sauna, one was a dry sauna, one was a wet sauna. Yeah, it was very cool.
Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. Besides that, what was the highlight of the trip? And besides bunking with that dude?
Yeah, Thomas. Thomas was great. The highlight of the trip was realizing how fast I live my life and that I need to slow down. It is so slow over there in a good way that, you know, turning 40 is obviously a milestone birthday. And it was a good reminder that life is not meant to be gone from one achievement to the next, but to enjoy the journey as you're going to wherever you want to go. And so that was the best part of the trip, was having that realization.
Josh Hanisch, 329, the company, the marketing company. Thanks for the wisdom about marketing, for sure, and about AI and how that's changing a lot of what we do, but, like, bringing it back home to all of us can relate to your closing thoughts and thanks. Words of wisdom. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was great to see you again.
You too.
Yeah.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.